Now it's time for Power of Prophecy, continuing the legacy of Tex Mars, exposing evil, and promoting Jesus Christ as Savior. Here's your host, Jerry Barrett.
Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. I'm your host, Jerry Barrett, honored to have you join me again this week. I have asked a very dear friend of mine to come on the air. He wrote an outstanding article, and I couldn't wait to get on the phone with him and chat about it. Pastor Chuck Baldwin from Liberty Fellowship. Pastor Baldwin, welcome to Power of Prophecy.
Jerry, it's great to be with you. Thank you very much.
I always look forward to our visits, and, you know, it's funny. I can't tell you how many people say, you know, you haven't had Pastor Baldwin on your show for a while now. I said, I'm working on it.
It's always good to be with you.
Oh, I enjoy these visits. Now, this article you wrote not long after Charlie Kirk had been assassinated, and you referenced a video on YouTube by the McIntosh team. So I watched that video. They bring up some very interesting and valid points, don't they?
Oh, yeah, they really do. And I think there's been a lot of people around the country that have likewise done some very, very thorough investigative research and reporting on it. It's just too bad that the FBI doesn't do it.
You know, when it first happened, you know, I still have not seen the video. I just can't bring myself to follow the blood and gore. I was devastated because it seemed like Charlie had turned the corner and was beginning to get the whole truth out there, not just the truth the Zionist one, wasn't he?
That's the whole crux of the story. It really is. I mean, this is, in my opinion, the entire reason why Charlie had to be assassinated, and why he particularly was targeted. I mean, we have to put this in context. The context is that the Israel narrative is collapsing worldwide. The 2 years of indiscriminate mass slaughter, ethnic cleansing, genocide that have taken the lives of not 60,000, but more like 300,000 Palestinians in Gaza has just sickened the conscience of the world. When you look at Western Europe, the major cities in Great Britain, Germany, Italy, France are literally on fire. You're talking tens of millions of people marching in the streets. Now, 2 weeks ago, over the weekend, the people of Italy totally shut down the entire country of Italy. I mean, shut it down. No airlines were shut down. Buses were shut down. Trains were shut down. Vehicle travel was shut down. Businesses were shut down. The entire economy, the entire country came to a screeching halt because tens of millions of people jammed the transportation centers, the retail establishments, downtown areas, commercial areas, and just by their mere presence of such a mass of humanity, closed down day-to-day life for a weekend. That was in Italy. And again, millions marching in Paris, millions marching in London, millions marching in Germany. You know, the whole world is sick of what Israel has been doing. And the United States' complicity toward it. And make no mistake about it, everybody in the world knows that this is not just Israel's genocide. It's America's genocide. They know that. And in America, we've been the last ones to, if you want to say, catch up with this atrocity and to burn the conscience of the people to the point of doing anything about it. But now all that has changed. Every poll I have read over the last, say, 3 to 4 weeks, every poll is showing support for Israel underwater. When you get under the age of 50, more people are opposed to Israel than are supportive of Israel. When you get under 40, the number doubles or triples. When you get under 30, you're talking only a handful of people. And this is Democrats, Republicans, left, right, secularist, religious, doesn't matter. It's universal. When you get under 20 and you get into the Gen Z generation, that support for Israel is in single digits. You know, so the vast majority of the American people today are fed up with Israel. And this is not lost to Netanyahu. This is not lost to the Zionists. They know that the future of Israel's place in civilization is very precarious, if not foreboding. I mean, give it another 10 years when more of the baby boomers, which are the main ones who are, unfortunately, that's my generation, who are, you know, blind and deaf and dumb to all things Israel, and they're still caught up with Christian Zionism and Schofieldism and all that junk. And, you know, give another 10 years and how many more of them will be gone? You know, they'll be dead. You know, then you're getting into the, you know, the 25 and 30, 35-year-olds. Now they're taking their places in business. They're taking their places in education. They're taking their places in government. You know, they're taking their places in leadership areas of the country. And these people are anti-Zionist by and large. So over the next 10 years, you know, the support for Israel is going to disappear. I mean, that's just a logistical fact. You know, this has nothing to do with theology. This has nothing to do with politics. This is just a cultural phenomenon that cannot be stopped. There's no going back. Now, Israel is very much aware of this, and they have been doing everything they can to try and change the narrative. You've got Zionist billionaires now that are buying up mainstream media like CBS News and Paramount. You've got billionaires that are trying to take over social media. They're paying Israel influencers $7,000 per post, Jerry, per post. to laud Israel. This is all a psyops, propaganda effort on behalf of Israel to try and change the narrative. But it's not working. You know, I've been fighting this fight for decades. And, you know, I remember for so many years, it was like, it's not a good comparison because I don't place myself in his category, but it's like John the Baptist in the wilderness, all by yourself, and that's the way I felt for a long, long, long time. And now then, you cannot look at social media anywhere. You cannot go online without, you know, you're watching Candace Owens, you're watching Tucker Carlson, if you're in the comedy business, you're watching Dave Chappelle, you know, you're watching Joe Rogan. I mean, all these guys, that has nothing to do with their religion. They're just fed up with Israel and Zionism and the genocidal state that we call Israel. They've fed up, and they're influencing the vast, vast majority of the American citizenry. The only exception to what I just said was Charlie Kirk's audience. Charlie Kirk had been the Zionist poster boy from the beginning of his entrance into public life. He was financed by Zionists. He had, what, $150 million or more in the bank when he was killed, and most of that money was given to him by Israel or by Israel's agents. So he was their main pipeline to the younger generation. And that segment of the younger generation was the Christian, evangelical, Trump-supporting college kids that Charlie Kirk appealed to. That was his base. He had 3,500 chapters on college campuses around the United States. I mean, that's a huge influence, a huge footprint in the college campus arena. I mean, Charlie Kirk was so popular in Republican circles that he, in another 10 years or so, he very likely could have been president of the United States. He was on that path. If not president, at least a U.S. senator. I mean, he was on the path of exerting national and therefore global influence. And he was an ardent Zionist. He supported the genocide in Gaza. He denied the people of Palestinian as a people. You know, he was right down the line. But things changed. He finally began to look at what was happening in Gaza for himself. He began to ask himself questions. He began asking other people questions. He began talking about Israel and questioning the narrative and wondering if he was right to support the Israeli state the way he did. Then he did the unthinkable. He brought in Dave Smith. He brought in Tucker Carlson to his platform. And, of course, they unabashedly, you know, told the truth about Israel. And Charlie let them have a free voice. He didn't try to stifle their view. And then he and, of course, Candace Owens have been good friends since they were teenagers. Candace is one of the leading opponents to Zionist Israel right now in the entire country. Her research and her work on Zionism is almost unprecedented. And she and Charlie talked, and they texted back and forth. And since his death, I think one of the things that's really puts this exclamation point on it was she unveiled the texts that she and Charlie had just days before he was assassinated. And in those texts, Charlie made it clear to Candace that he was finished with Israel. So he had, in a matter of less than a month, he had gone from 100% rabid support for Israel through the questioning phase, the uncertainty phase, and had made a dogmatic, emphatic, resolute decision, I am done with Israel. And that's a quote from him. And then, of course, you had Netanyahu personally call him a couple weeks before the assassination, offering him $150 million if he would remain faithful to the Israel narrative. And Charlie Kirk turned him down. He turned down $150 million from Benjamin Netanyahu himself. You don't do that. Then you have the billionaire Zionist Bill Ackman and his group of Zionist toadies that called Charlie on the carpet at the Hamptons in New York. And for an entire day, Charlie sat in a room full of very powerful, rich, influential Zionists browbeating him and just, you know, cajoling him to hold the line. Don't you dare get out of line. Don't you go in the direction you're talking about. Don't you dare have Candace back on. on the platform at TPUSA. Don't you have Tucker Carlson? I mean, this went on for hours and hours, threatening him. The next day, after that brouhaha in which they tried to force him through intimidation to toe the line, he went on Megyn Kelly's show. And you could tell in that interview, if you've watched it, probably most of viewers and listeners have, he was visibly shaken. You know, there were times when he was talking to Megyn that his body was shaking. He had difficulty composing himself, but he did a good job of composing himself as the best that he could. And he was just complaining vociferously about the treatment that he was getting and the pressure that was being put against him by these ultra-rich, powerful Zionist forces and attacking his character and who he was. And, you know, he made it clear on Megan's interview that he wasn't going to change his mind. I mean, it was clear that he was angry at what was happening, and he was not going to let himself be bullied into submission. So all these things happened like boom, 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 boom before the event in Utah took place. And when I preached the sermon, and then from that sermon, I wrote the column that you referenced at the beginning. I said four conclusive statements in that message. And I still stand by these four. And then I've added my own personal opinion, of which I am very, very convinced. But the four statements were the things that I absolutely were convinced. But number one, the official FBI narrative is impossible to believe. Absolutely impossible. I mean, I'm not going to go over those things. We've been over it so many times. It's the most ludicrous, absurd interpretation of events that I have ever seen in my life. I mean, this makes the John Kennedy assassination look reasonable compared to what Patel is trying to tell the American people happened. I'm absolutely convinced that the killing could not have happened the way they said it happened. Number two, I'm absolutely convinced that that 22-year-old kid, what's his name, Tyler Robinson, did not shoot Charlie Kirk. Absolutely. There's no way that that kid killed Kirk. Number three, I am absolutely convinced that Kirk was not shot with a .30-06 caliber rifle. I'm not a military man, but I've been a hunter most of my adult life. I'm kind of a gun guy. I own a lot of guns. I do a lot of shooting. Guns are a part of my life. I conceal carry everywhere I go. I know how to use a gun. I know how to treat a gun. I know what the different ballistics are in various calibers, et cetera. And there's no one that knows anything about guns, and I'm not an expert, so you can talk to the experts, and they can. You know, everybody knows that Charlie was not shot with a .30-06 caliber rifle. A .30-06 caliber bullet anywhere in the neck or head region would have blown half his head off. Literally. And I'm not trying to be gross. I'm just being factual about ballistics. That is a extremely, extremely powerful cartridge. And if it was a .30-06, there wouldn't have been much left of Charlie Kirk's head. So there was no way that was a .30-06 caliber rifle. On the fourth conclusion, I'm absolutely convinced that Charlie Kirk's killing was a professional assassination. I'm absolutely convinced of that. Now, the theoretical part in my mind that I'm offering is I am personally convinced that Israel were the agents of Israel were the assassins. And I don't think it was just one. I think there were several. I think there was a team of assassins that took out Charlie Kirk. There was one shooter, but there was a team of people that assisted him. I mean, when you have a professional assassination, there's a lot of moving parts. You know, you've got people on the ground. You've got people setting up. You've got people covering up. hiding evidence, the taking things from the scene immediately. You've got transportation issues, getting people there and then getting people out of there quickly, you know, without being noticed and disappearing. You've got a lot of moving parts, a lot of people that are professionals. You have state actors that are assisting this. You've got people that have been notified ahead of time. This is going to happen and you're going to stand down and here's $100 million to do it for your trouble. And you've got to bribe a lot of people. You've got to bribe doctors. You've got to bribe people on the ground. You've got to bribe public officials. You've got to bribe coroners. You've got to bribe, you know, just so many people involved. So we're talking a state actor. The only two countries that would be capable of doing this inside the continental United States would be the CIA or the Mossad. And, you know, I am absolutely convinced that this was a Mossad operation. This was committed by Israel. Do I have proof? No. Will anybody ever have proof of that? No. They will make sure that everything is covered up, just like with JFK, RFK, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, all these high figure assassinations that were committed by the government. That's what makes it a professional assassination. There's no evidence. You can't prove it, and the people that could testify, they're either dead or they're bought off. So I believe that this was done by Israel because they're the only ones that profit. You know, you have to go back and ask, what's the motive? They definitely had means and opportunity. Israel is the assassination capital of the world. They assassinate people everywhere. So, you know, means and opportunity are the easy part for the Zionist regime. So the only question is motive. And there's no, who had motive? The only people that had motive was Israel, because Charlie Kirk was speaking to the one group of Americans that were still very loyal to Zionist Israel. The Republican, conservative, Trump supporting teenagers or young adults on the college campuses of the United States. That was the last bastion of solid pro-Zionist conviction in the country. As I said before, the rest of the country, Israel is underwater and it's sinking by the day. But that group was a major holdout and a major asset for Israel. Now that group is gone. Charlie, if he would have lived another 2 or 3 months, he would have publicly had Candace back on. He would have had Tucker back on. He would have had Dave Smith back on. He would have had other anti-Zionists on. And then he would have personally got up and said, I've seen the light. I see the truth. Nobody's going to bully me. You know, this is a cult. This is devilish. This is not Christian. And I'm opposed to it. And he would have just, it would have been disaster for Israel. They had to shut him up. But unfortunately, as you know, for them, for Israel, I think it was too little too late. And that's not to minimize what happened to Charlie Kirk, an egregious, ugly, grotesque murder of an innocent human being that should never have happened. But it was too late. The damage was done. And Candace is just a bulldog. And people that follow Charlie follow Candace. And they are seeing what Charlie was saying, and they were hearing what Charlie was saying, and they have shifted, and the current leadership, whatever that is, of TPUSA, they're just a bunch of money grubbing toadies that are trying to split up the $100 million that they've got hanging around there to, you know, to spend. And so they're fighting for control of some money, and they have no answers. They can't answer the questions. They don't want to answer the questions. They're just, you know, they're just trying to pretend that they know something they don't know, and trying to get their hands on the money. And so TPUSA is in total disarray. This organization, it'll fall apart in the next 6 months. The money will be spent on whatever projects and it'll be gone, and the money's not going to come in. And so that organization is defunct. But the reality of the events leading up to Charlie's death are now coming out, and everybody knows, everybody sees, and I know that I'm not the only one. You know, you talk about the McIntosh article and so many others. They're all saying the same thing. Look, if Israel didn't do it, who did? We know that that 22-year-old kid didn't do it. We know the narrative of the FBI is absolutely a mockery. And who could have done it? Who else could have done it? Who else would have the means to do it? Who had the motive to do it? And even though, you know, nobody can prove it, you never will be, but in their gut, people are saying it had to be Israel. It had to be. I mean, you even have Benjamin Netanyahu before they had even made an arrest. Now get this, Jerry, before the authorities had even arrested that kid for the shooting, before he was arrested, Benjamin Netanyahu was on international television frantically pleading with the world saying, we didn't do it. We didn't do it. We didn't do it. We didn't do it. Well, why did he have to do that? If you're an innocent person, why would you get on television before they've even caught the guy that they said did it and say, oh, it wasn't me. It wasn't me. I didn't do it. Well, all that does is everybody go look at you and say, well, why are you up saying you didn't do it? If you didn't do it, why would you have to say anything about it? You know,
right.
The guy in essence just said, I did it, but I don't want you to know that I did it. You know, I mean, that's how this whole thing happened. And that's what I believe is behind it.
You know, the one phrase that everything that I do, Chuck, whether it's for research for this radio show or my articles, is the Latin phrase, and you've got it here in your article, cui bono.
Mm-hmm.
Who benefits? And when you start putting the pieces together, Netanyahu and the Zionists paying influencers on TikTok to be posting positive videos about Israel, propaganda. Who just bought TikTok? Because Donald Trump said that the only way we're not going to ban it is if it's bought by Americans, pseudo-Americans. Israel, Zionist, Jews bought TikTok.
Right.
So the pieces start falling together. And the fact that, I'm not going to lie, Chuck, when I saw Tucker Carlson speak at that TPUSA event in Florida a few months ago, I was flabbergasted that he was even given a forum in that environment, because Tucker, since he's not under the thumb of Murdoch and other Zionists at Fox News, has opened his mind and started, kind of like what happened with Tex, what happened with you. You know, we grew up with this Zionist, Israel, love Israel, bless Israel, be blessed, blah, blah, blah. When you start asking questions and you start reading for yourself, you came to the realization that Jesus came for everybody, not just a certain people. And the fact that they deny Christ, then there's an issue there. And it happened with Tucker. I know it happened with Charlie because of what Candace has said. It happened with Candace. And his power, his ability to reach young people was going to decimate what little support college students and conservatives had for Israel, and it couldn't happen. Cui bono. Who benefited? The nation of Israel. The Zionists all over the world benefited from his murder. Chuck, we have flown through 30 minutes, brother. We're going to have to take a brief break. It goes fast. I'm not kidding.
It does.
Oh, my goodness. My guest today is Pastor Chuck Baldwin with Liberty Fellowship. We have to take a brief pause, and when we come back, we're going to dive right back in. Stay with us, won't you? We'll be right back. Hello, friends. Thank you for tuning in to Power of Prophecy. I don't want to cut short my interview with Pastor Chuck Baldwin, so we're not going to have a great big ad this time, but if you could, please don't forget to help us with our Texas Children's Home Fund, as well as helping us here at the ministry. Your support keeps us going, keeps us on the airwaves, keeps us printing the newsletter and publishing more books. And Sandra and I want to thank you so much for your support and wish each and every one of you a happy Thanksgiving. Thank you, and may God richly bless you. Okay, and now let's return to our regular program. My guest today is Pastor Chuck Baldwin. Chuck, welcome back to Power of Prophecy.
As always, Jerry, it's great to be with you.
Now, we were discussing the assassination of Charlie Kirk, and the question I always ask on things like this is, qui bono, who benefits? And you used the same phrase in your article. And it, to me, Israel has the means and the opportunity to pull something like this off, doesn't it?
Without question, Israel is the assassination capital of the world. There is no one in modern history that has carried out more assassinations around the world than the state of Israel. They have literally carte blanche to assassinate whoever they want, especially in the Western European theater, the United States, and in the Middle Eastern and African theaters. They have unlimited resources available to them. They have the green light from most of the powers of those countries, the political powers. They come and go at will. In the case of Western Europe and the United States, they pretty much own the federal governments of those countries. They have Mossad agents inside the governments of those countries. They have Mossad agents inside the diplomatic corps. They have Mossad agents inside business. And so they have unlimited opportunity. They're the only entity outside of the CIA that would have the ability to do what they do in terms of killing people surreptitiously and getting by with it with no repercussion than Israel.
You know, it wasn't long ago that they modified pagers and got rid of who they deem to be terrorists or enemies of Israel. And Netanyahu came to visit Trump at the White House and gave him a golden pager. Is that?
Yes, they did.
Is that kind of a threat, or was that a celebration between people?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's probably both. I think it's a reminder of Donald Trump that even the President of the United States is not invincible to the reach of the Mossad. And yes, I'm sure it was a recognition of the collaboration that took place, because there's no question the CIA was very much involved along with MI6 in those pager attacks. And you know, by the way, you're right when you say that the terrorists in that case were the Israelis. This was a by definition an act of terrorism. They blew up these. Well, first they manufactured them into a very highly sophisticated network of spying, which MI6 and Mossad and CIA are the world leaders. They were able to put these pagers in the hands of a lot of people inside Lebanon. They were wanting to try and disrupt Hezbollah and their ability to defend the state of Lebanon from Israeli attacks. But it was an indiscriminate act of terror. That they did not target anybody in particular. They had no control over exactly who had purchased those pagers. They had ideas that some of the people that purchased them might have been Hezbollah members, but it didn't matter to them who they were. And as it turned out, of course, the vast, vast majority of the victims of that pager attack were innocent civilian women and children. And of course, let's remember that this extended all the way to London, England as well. It wasn't just Lebanon where these explosions went off. This was in London, England, and other places, I'm sure that we were not notified. But the point is they were not targeting particular military personnel or high-level government officials or whatever. It was just whoever happened to buy the pagers were the victims, and there were thousands of them, and that is the quintessential definition of terrorism.
Unbelievable how the entire incident has been portrayed as, well, they're fighting terrorism. Nobody in any form of media other than a few on alternative media will have the intestinal fortitude to call a spade and say what the Mossad and Israel has done with the pagers, with what they've done to the people in Gaza, is a complete and undeniable act of terrorism. But like you said, at the beginning, they have carte blanche. They're allowed to do this.
Well, yeah, I mean, and to let some of your listeners, you know, just have some examples of what you just said. Whenever Charlie Kirk was killed, instantly the majority of the American people, especially the younger American people, the people that Charlie Kirk had reached with his message. And as he was, over the couple of months previous to his assassination, was in the process of, well, I say that, but then Candace came out with the text messages between she and Charlie just weeks before his death, and she showed how Charlie was saying in those text messages to her that he had already made the decision to walk away from Israel. He wasn't just in the process of changing his view on his support for Israel, which he had been, you know, the poster boy for Israel for all those years. I mean, he wouldn't have gotten where he was had that not been for the billionaire donor class of Israel supporting him. And so he was, you know, very happy to promote Israel and to defend the genocide in Gaza and all that. But after a period of time, you know, I guess he had a conscience because it began to really bother him. And then whenever Bill Ackman and the other Jewish donor elite began, you know, the mafia style threatening for him to stay in line. And then after he turned down $150 million personally from Netanyahu over the telephone, he went on Megyn Kelly's show the day after the Hamptons event and told the whole world. And you could tell when you watch that interview that Charlie was shaking. He was very, very fearful of what had happened the day before. But he was unmoved. In fact, what happened actually encouraged him to continue with his thoughts on the matter that, you know, this was a criminal organization and they were ruling by intimidation, coercion, threats, et cetera. And he refused to be bullied. And he told the world on Megyn's show, you know, that they can't do that. I'm not going to submit to their browbeating and to their intimidations. And so it just encouraged him to, you know, increase the resolve of his heart to resist that kind of intimidation. So it wasn't that just he was in the process of removing himself from the support of Israel, but he had already made the decision. It was plain that he had made the decision that he was going to have Candace Owens on one of his upcoming TPUSA major rallies. He was going to continue to have Tucker Carlson on. He was going to continue to expose Israel for what he had come to believe it was, a rogue, unlawful, sinister state that, you know, that could not be supported. And, you know, when that came out, everybody instinctively knew in their hearts, or at least felt in their hearts, that it was Israel behind the assassination. In fact, even before they arrested that 22-year-old kid for the murder, before they even had him in custody, Benjamin Netanyahu was on international television twice, you know, screaming, "We didn't do it. We didn't do it. Israel didn't do it. I didn't do it." Well, you know, who does that? You know, you don't even have an arrest. You don't even have a charge levied. You know, it's just happened, and he's on, you know, television saying, "We didn't do it." Well, that just made him look all the more guilty. And the instinctive nature of the American people, and especially the young people, was that, well, if he wasn't guilty, why would he be protesting his innocence so early? And so the instinct of the American people immediately turned to Israel. And they know, I mean, a lot of the Americans, we're talking the evangelical Christian Zionists, you know, they're the ones that refuse to listen. They're the ones that will not listen to facts. They're the ones that who are blinded by this spiritual religious cult of Christian Zionism. And they refuse to acknowledge any truth that will contradict their superstitions. And that's all they are, is superstitions. So when we talk about the people that, you know, won't wake up and they don't see it, most of those are either the robotic, rabid robots of Donald Trump in the Republican Party, the extreme part of MAGA. MAGA is now, of course, splitting right down the middle, and a lot of people are fed up with MAGA, and they're leaving. And Trump's already lost about half of MAGA. But the other half are loyal to him no matter what he does. He could, you know, like he said years ago, he could stand on Fifth Avenue in New York and murder somebody, and his supporters would still support him. And those kind of people would. And the Christian evangelicals, the Zionists, they will support Trump no matter what. But I'm telling you, Jerry, that the public opinion as a whole is turning against Christian Zionism. They're turning against the church for its promotion and acceptance of Christian Zionism. They're turning against Israel in major numbers. I mean, when you get under 35, the polls are single-digit support for Israel. That's how much support Israel has lost among the people in America 35 years and younger. And even those that are under 40, the majority are now anti-Israel. Some of the older people, my boomer generation, they're still supporting Israel because they've been ensconced in this all their lives. They don't know anything else, and they're too old to change their mind, you know. But Jerry, the vast majority of people have already awakened to Israel's debauchery and genocide, ethnic cleansing, sheer, utter, vile wickedness that it commits 24/7, and they're sick of it. So the track record of Israel deserves that. I mean, Trump himself, according to Max Blumenthal, who himself is Jewish, but he's the editor of Gray Zone, and is one of the most well-researched, investigative journalism agencies in the country today. And again, that's Gray Zone. And his name is Max Blumenthal. He's a Jewish man by profession. And he says, you know, that Donald Trump, but he has contacts inside the Trump administration. And he says that his contacts have told him that Trump himself is very, very fearful of what Netanyahu would do to him if he does not toe the Israeli line. So when you have the president of the United States, who is the most protected single individual in the world, afraid that that Israel assassination program could reach him, it goes to show you the reputation that Israel has for assassination. They've assassinated people. I mean, just a couple of examples. Ismail Haniyeh, the head of Gaza's political office, is not a military man, a chief negotiator, was assassinated by an Israeli strike in Tehran. He was there on a diplomatic mission in pursuit of peace agreement. Israel has assassinated hundreds of journalists in Gaza. When I say assassinated, I mean they weren't killed indiscriminately by the bombings and missile attacks. No, we're talking about sniper attacks. We're talking about targeted drone attacks. More journalists have been killed in Gaza over the last 2 years by the IDF than all the journalists that were killed in World War I and World War II combined. You know, think about that. The massive military operations of both of those wars. But they didn't. No one targeted journalists in those days. No one targeted Red Cross workers in those days. Physicians, hospital personnel, rescue personnel. They were not targeted. But in Gaza, they are targeted by the IDF. They've assassinated clergymen, preachers, assassinated aid workers. And some of the ways that they've done that are just unconscionable. I'm thinking of that one little girl, 5 years old. I don't know if you saw the video of this. It's horrific. She was trapped in a blown out automobile. All of her family had been killed in the attacks. Her mother, her father, her siblings, aunts and uncles, all of her family had been killed. She was the only one that was left alive, and she was huddled in this bombed out automobile. She had a cell phone. She was calling people that she knew for help. And an aid team, clearly marked aid worker vehicle, came to her assistance. And Israel, IDF, was monitoring the little girl's cell calls. And they waited. They waited patiently for the rescue workers to come to get her. And when the rescue workers came to the automobile, the bombed out shell of an automobile where she was huddled, then they sent their missiles and they killed everyone on the spot, including the little girl. That's the kind of assassinations we're talking about. You know, we're talking about the Iranian consulate in Damascus, Syria, killing diplomats and negotiators. That's April 2024. Ali Shamkhani, Israel's large-scale military attack on Iran targeted and killed this Iranian official. He was the chief negotiator leading a committee on nuclear talks with the United States. The peace talks with the United States were arranged by President Donald Trump. That was on June 13 of this year. Gaza negotiators were the target of an Israeli assassination in a residential area in the Qatari capital, Doha. Again, President Donald Trump had given the Hamas negotiators his assurance that they would be safe, that they could conduct their negotiations without fear of endangerment. Well, so much for that. Israeli forces, with the full cooperation of the United States, flew their jets into Qatar, a supposed ally of the United States, at one of our largest bases, in fact, the largest base in the area around Israel, military base, U.S. military base, was there. And they bombed the negotiating site, and the negotiators miraculously survived, but many of the Qatari people did not. They have targeted women and children. They have targeted peaceful civilian diplomats, ordinary citizens in Lebanon and Syria. So whenever this happened with Charlie Cook, everybody that has any kind of a brain immediately went to Israel. And still to this day, and I'm one of those, count me as one of those, Jerry, I believe with all my heart that Charlie Kirk was killed by a professional assassination team from Israel.
You know, when you consider the impact that Charlie Kirk was having on the youth, and you look at the, I don't care if it's the Pew Research or if it's Gallup, but the waning support for Israel for any demographic under 50, it hits a cliff in the 30s and, like you said, goes down to the single digits. Well, those were the people that Charlie Kirk was reaching.
Yes.
So he was public enemy number one with Israel, if you understand the entire picture.
And oh, no question about that.
And when
no
you,
question about that.
Yeah, when you know the background of what they did to the Palestinians before Israel was declared a state, they are barbarians in the strongest term I can think of.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And let's narrow it just a little bit more on what you said about the young people. The college-age progressives, your liberal Democrat progressives on the college campuses, turned against Israel years ago, especially from the beginning of the genocide in Gaza, especially over the last 2 years. But even before the last 2 years, the progressive college-age kids had already turned on Israel. So the thing that augments what you said about Charlie Kirk's influence and what Israel could not allow to happen is the fact that Charlie was reaching a particular niche within the college-age young people. And that niche was the Christian / conservative / MAGA young people. These were the ones that were always the strongest supporters among the youth of Israel. So they'd already lost the Democratic college-age kids. So they could never regain that group. The young people that Charlie reached was the last group of that generation that in America that was still supportive of Israel. So the loss of the Charlie Kirk college age kids, the TPUSA kids, that would be the final straw for Israel's future. Because these are the kids that 10, 15 years from now, they're going to be the ones that are leading the country. They're going to be the ones that are going to be in business. They're going to be the ones that are going to go into politics. They're going to go into industry. They're going to be in leadership capacities around the country in various positions. And they're going to be the future leaders of this nation. And so they were the final holdouts supporting Israel of the people under the age of 35 in the United States. Charlie was their Pied Piper for Israel. And when they discovered Israel Netanyahu, IDF, Bill Ackman, Assad, when they found out that Charlie not only was thinking about shifting his position, but had already done so. I mean, after he turned down $150 million from Netanyahu personally on a person-to-person phone call. What greater signal than that can you give? And then the Ackman affair at Hamptons, and then what he was saying to Megan and what he was saying to Candace and what he was telling people, and then going around saying, I believe that Israel is going to kill me. Everything that he was saying showed the Israelis that they had lost their number one Pied Piper of the college-age American kids in America. He was the last straw. He was the last hope. If he got up at his TPUSA meetings later on in the summer, later on in the fall this year, and had Candace come on and Tucker come on and started talking about Israel and exposing Israel, they could not let that happen. So not only was it just the young people, but specifically now, because of this, it's the conservative young people. It's the Christian young people, the evangelical young people. They're seeing the truth about Israel. They're not like their mom and dad and their grandma and their grandpa. They're seeing the truth. They're open-minded about Israel. They saw what happened to Charlie. They know what Charlie was saying. They know what he was thinking. They know that he was reversing course on Israel. And they know that he was shot for it. And so now they're going, man, you know, we've been sold a bill of goods. We've been lied to. And so the younger age evangelical Christian conservatives, MAGA kids, they're now in mass leaving their support for Israel. So it's not just the progressives anymore. Now it's the entirety of that age group that Israel has lost. So this thing has backfired on Israel in a major way. The protests going on in Europe are massive, massive. Tens of millions of people. The media is not covering it. They're trying to pretend it doesn't exist. But the riots and the protests in Western Europe, whether it's France, whether it's Germany, whether it's England, whether it's Italy, they are out in the streets by the millions protesting against Israel. So they have lost that age group. They've lost the future. So now they're trying to buy the media, and they bought CBS News. They bought Paramount. They're in the process of buying CNN. They bought TikTok. They're trying to buy up social media, and they're paying podcasters and other influencers $7,000 per post to say positive things about Israel. And it's still not working. The narrative is gone. I mean, you know, everything is so horrible, Jerry, but the one positive part of all this is that they've lost the narrative. People are seeing Israel for what it really is, an evil, wicked, abominable monster of war, death, bloodshed, genocide, ethnic cleansing, an out-of-state rogue nation that does not deserve to be a part of the global humanity of nations. And people know that. And so that's the positive part of it.
Amen. Well, the mask has come off the model, and what is underneath is grotesque to look at. And it's, they overplayed their hand, and they have, well, they've basically bitten their nose off to smite the face. And now the future is looking bleaker and bleaker. And it's sad that Charlie had to pay the ultimate price. But if we can wake up more people to the evil, you called it a cult. It is a cult. The Christian Zionist cult. If we can get more people to wake up and realize that a Jew, the Apostle Paul, in Galatians 3, verse 26 through 29, tells us who are the chosen people. It's not Genesis. It laid the groundwork, but Jesus was the culmination.
Sure.
And it's not a blood. It is a blood bought people that are the chosen of God. And Chuck, I want to thank you for coming on and being a guest of Power Prophecy. I always love visiting with you, and I love going to your website, chuckbaldwinlive.com, checking out your articles. I'm on your mailing list. I love getting your articles, and I want to thank you for doing the great work that you're doing.
Well, Jerry, I return the compliment. I thank God for what you're doing. And it's always a pleasure to be with you.
All righty, my friend. You have a great day. God bless you, sir.
Thank you, Jerry. Same to you.
Thank you, brother. Okay, that's going to take care of this week's program. My guest has been Pastor Chuck Baldwin. You can go to his website at chuckbaldwinlive.com. We want to thank you for tuning in and giving us an hour of your time. We greatly appreciate it. And as always, I pray you will tune in again next week at this same time. Tune in and discover the power of prophecy.